KU a 5-point underdog tomorrow against Baylor in Allen Fieldhouse. If this game were being played in Waco, I would guess that line would probably be around 7, maybe 8. So Allen Fieldhouse gets a little bit of a nod, even though there's not much atmosphere inside Allen Fieldhouse. I kind of want to take the plus 5. Not that I'm picking KU to win outright, just that I think KU can at least be competitive on senior night against Baylor. Jesse Newell tweeted this out earlier today. KU's never been a home underdog, at least as far back as the data goes that you can collect on old lines, which dates back to 1997-98.
That's crazy, because even in, you know, like 2000-2001, like years where you were getting like an 8 seed, you would have thought they would have been a home underdog at some point.
Yeah, there would have been like 1999, the years where
like
you're
Kenny Gregory.
Yeah, Nick Bradford, those guys. Yeah, there was the year they lost to Duke in the second round. And they progressively got better over the next couple of years, the Eric Chenoweth years. But at no point were they ever expected to lose a game inside Allen Fieldhouse. This is a very weird juncture, but yet it doesn't feel that weird, given what we know about KU, given what we know about Baylor, given what we know about how weird the season's been. Let me ask you this, though. If it were a normal year and it's Saturday night, 7 o'clock, prime time, senior night, that place is juiced. You've got the number 2 team in the country coming to your place. They've already beat you once this year. How would that change, A, the line, B, how you would feel about KU's chances?
I think it would feel more like, remember one of Bill Self's first seasons, in fact, it might have been actually his first, when they hosted Oklahoma State, and it was John Lucas, and he started the game like 8-for-8 or something.
Allen.
Yeah, and that team made a Final Four. And I think Oklahoma State was ranked higher, and it was one of those games, it was just a crazy game, back and forth, KU won, and it almost felt like it was like an upset, you know, in that situation. So I think you'd kind of get that feel, and it'd be the rare feel of the packed house where, as the fan of the Blue Blood, you get to root for the upset to happen, which rarely happens. So, again,
are
I
you
guess,
telling me the college basketball universe is going to be rooting for Kansas at home tomorrow against Baylor, lowly Baylor?
Maybe. Do you think Baylor's like still rusty? Because they looked a little rusty in that game against Iowa State.
Until they didn't.
Yeah. So do you think it just continues on from there? Or
no, that's actually the worst thing that could have happened to Baylor. That outcome against Iowa State, well, it's the worst thing that could happen for anybody else who has to play Baylor. Because at first you're going, okay, yeah, they are rusty. Maybe, you know, this time off has. And then there is the awakening, the moment where you understand it doesn't matter. That's how good they are. That when they decide to turn it on, every little good vibe or positive action that you've taken against them in this game is going to be nullified. And they're going to show you who's the boss here. Now, the difference is that Iowa State's one of the worst low major teams in the country, and Kansas, over the last 2-plus weeks, has transformed themselves into what I believe to be one of the nation's elite defenses. And that is the question I think we all have going into this game, is will that defense continue to look elite against an offense like Baylor? Who, you know, regardless of what you're trying to do defensively, because the Big 12 has some good defenses between West Virginia and Texas and Texas Tech and Kansas. It's about as strong of a defensive league as there is in the country. Yet Baylor, with Jared Butler and Davion Mitchell, Macy Oteague, they make everything look pretty easy. They dissect whatever you're trying to do, almost rendering it like rudimentary. Like, what's next? Like, give us something else. The way that they sort of, I mean, more teams like Texas Tech and Kansas started doing it, the icing of the ball screens and forcing the ball handler towards the baseline. Jared Butler's just going to carve it up by himself. He'll just jump through two defenders, get to the rim and throw a lob or kick it out to Davion Mitchell or Maceo Teague, who are going to be wide open on the perimeter for a three.
Do you remember exactly what Baylor did last time they played Kansas?
You mean this year?
Yeah, like offensively. It was a clinic. I mean, Jared Butler.
KU got really hot in the second half.
They did. But just what the Baylor offense did versus that Kansas defense, and I know it's not the same as during this stretch. But beyond Jared Butler scoring the 30 points, going 7 of 9 from 3, he also had 8 assists. And a lot of those threes were actually good defense. He just made a better shot. Baylor in that game shot 58% on twos. They shot 47% on threes. They only missed one free throw. And even of the misses they had, they collected 42% of the offensive rebounds. It was a perfect offensive game for them.
I just remember that one, there was a play where there was a ball screen and Jared Butler had the ball and he ended up getting double teamed at the top of the key. I don't know if that's what KU was planning on doing or if it was miscommunication, but he ended up with whoever was guarding him. Maybe it was Marcus Garrett and I think David McCormick on him. And without even having to think, without a second's hesitation, Butler didn't look around for the open guy, didn't get flustered, didn't pick up his dribble. He just jumped through both defenders. Like, he just carves you up, and he makes it look so simple. And that's what is maybe my biggest point of caution before saying, hey, you know what, this is a different Kansas team. Maybe it is, but I think it's the same Baylor team. And even if Kansas is better, that doesn't mean anything towards closing the gap between yourselves and Baylor, because what have we said all year? It's Gonzaga, Baylor, and everybody else. I mean, I watched a little of Gonzaga last night. They were on the ropes in the second half. I already forgot who they were playing.
It was like Santa Clara, maybe?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Santa Clara. And it was, a 6-point game on the ropes, right? And just like that, they snapped their fingers and boom, it's done. Baylor hasn't even had that many close games, and they're not playing in the WCC. They're playing in the Big 12, and nobody's gave them a scare. I mean, Iowa State's the closest. They come, and they had to take 3 weeks off just to do it. I would say this, though. I think going back to the original question, if this were a packed Allen Fieldhouse, there would be part of me that would say, this is the biggest test Baylor's going to have all year. And it's senior night, and it's Saturday primetime, KU playing good basketball. There's part of me that would say, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the toughest test Baylor would have faced all year. I'd say that's the toughest test anybody in college basketball could possibly face, is playing against Kansas on senior night. But it doesn't feel like that, because whether it's senior night or whether you want to count UTEP next Thursday as senior night, there's not going to be any juice in that building.
I think that we've seen this before, though, with KU, where they've, at the end of the season, had to go on the road for senior day for another team, and it's packed there, and it's juiced, and KU's already clinched the Big 12. And we've seen them lose a handful of those games. Different animal, because this Baylor team is more to the likes of, like, a last year's Kansas, that level good, and that year's team, we didn't really see that. But I think it's definitely a possibility. I mean, it's still hard for me to wrap my head around the idea that, and I get it, there's less games this year, and they missed even more games with not playing the last 3 weeks, but the idea that this Baylor team, which is really good, like historically one of the better college basketball teams we've seen over the last 10, 15, 20 years, it's still really hard for me to wrap my head around that they're undefeated good. Like, that seems to me to be reserved for, like, when I think of that 2015 Kentucky team, I think of, like, the greatest college basketball defense I've ever seen. I think about a team who, off the bench, had, like, Devin Booker, you know, who's an NBA All-Star, or have Karl Anthony Towns, who's an NBA All-Star. Jared Butler is going to probably be in the pros for a long time because he can just score the basketball. And, I mean, Davion Mitchell, he looks like a guy who's going to be drafted at some point. But it's just, they're just a great college team that has transcended into, like, this historic college team. And while I think they're good enough to win a title this year, it still is hard for me to get to the idea that they're going to go undefeated.
It's interesting you bring up 2015 Kentucky, because I will agree, in my lifetime, I know there's people maybe older. In my lifetime, 2015 Kentucky is the best collection of talent I've ever seen in college basketball. But that's and during the season, we said, like, okay, this is the best team I've ever seen. And how many future pros did they have? How many future? I mean, Karl Anthony Towns and
more
Devin
than a
Booker.
Handful.
Let's start there.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, Willie Cauley Stein was a lottery pick. You had the two Harrison twins, right? Who at least had a cup of coffee.
Tyler Ulis, Trey Lyles.
Yeah, got drafted. Yeah. Lyles, first round pick.
You got a lot of pros there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best defense in the country. Best defense in the country. You couldn't score. I mean, Willie Cauley Stein was a freak. He was 6'11", and you could put him on a point guard.
No, literally. Like, remember their Elite Eight game. They were playing Notre Dame, and Jerrion Grant, who was like a first-round pick point guard, tried to go coast-to-coast and shoot a jump shot, and Willie Cauley Stein was with him hip-to-hip the whole way.
You had Devin Booker and Tyler Ulis, which is one of the best backcourts I've seen in my lifetime.
Was that even the starting backcourt either?
Remember
they were doing the platoon thing?
I don't think Devin Booker started. Devin Booker came off the bench. Devin Booker came off. Did Karl Anthony Towns come off the bench too? No, he started.
No, yeah, it was him and Willie Cauley Stein.
One of the Harris twins. Okay, whatever. This is not becoming a Kentucky appreciation hour. That was the number one defense in the country. They were sixth on offense. So it was a good offense, but it wasn't even like the best. It's not an all-time elite offense. It wasn't even a top five offense that year. Compare that to this Baylor team. They're the 10th ranked defense in the country. They're a really good defense. They're an elite defense. They're the number four offense, but look at the way that they've gotten there. They're number one in the country in three-point shooting. Number one, which is, I think, tough to do for a Power 5 team, or a Power 6 team. Because there are teams out there who maybe if you can just beat up, if you're the best team in your conference and you can beat up on.
Yeah, it's like Wofford or something.
They're shooting 43% from three-point range. They're fifth in the country in offensive rebounding. Fifth. And that's all because of Vital and Chamwa Chachwa. So you take a lot and you make more of the most efficient shot in the game. And on top of it, you're better than just about anybody because you take so many threes. What does that mean? Long rebounds. What does that mean? Easier to get offensive rebounds. You're stealing more extra possessions. So you're getting more attempts, more cracks at making more of those threes. It's not like you are overwhelmed by this collection of talent like you had at Kentucky with 10 guys, all of whom may be future pros. There's a couple pros on this team. But the difference is they are the perfect collection and sort of the perfect combination of what you would want in an elite college basketball team. They're different than Gonzaga. That's why I would love to see that game at some point in March. But you watch them play for 40 minutes. You're not going to be surprised why they're 18-0. You're going to go, oh, okay. Like, if they come into Allen Fieldhouse and win by 20, you're going to go, oh, okay, now I guess I get why or how this team is undefeated and looking like they could run the table. Because they really haven't shown any vulnerabilities other than COVID. Take 3 weeks off. Would you pick Kansas to win if there were going to be fans in the arena tomorrow?
No, I wouldn't. I think Baylor's too good. I think it's more likely that scenario where you said Baylor wins by 20 than KU covers. Or than KU wins, I'm sorry.
How much of this is a case of what we've said about Kansas so many times, which is you got a lot of good teams in the Big 12, but there's only one elite team. Isn't that kind of where we're at? We thought Texas was in that group. Early in the season, Kansas looked like they were in that group. Texas Tech, West Virginia, they've had their time as a top 10 team. Oklahoma's number 7 right now. But the gap between Baylor and whoever you think is the second best team is so much wider than we thought it was before the season. So much wider.
Yeah, I don't think that's just the Big 12, though. I mean, that's around the country, right? Gonzaga, Michigan, Baylor at this point have kind of just shown that, yeah, we're
I'm just saying we didn't see it playing out this way.
No.
Before the season, I thought Baylor was the best team. They were rightfully picked to win the Big 12. But I thought Kansas would be a top 10 team and sort of be nipping at their heels. It hasn't been close all year. Has not been close for 1 second. At no point in the season could you have reasonably made an argument that anybody other than Baylor was going to win the Big 12. And they are running away with it. Running away. And anybody who has a problem with them not playing enough games, go watch them. If you complain that Baylor is going to win the Big 12 despite only having 10 games under the belt so far, all that is to me, waving a big flag over your head signifying that you haven't watched them play much basketball. Because anybody who's watched them play would not have any problem with them being given the title, whether they're 2, 3, 4 games short. Oh, by the way, they're still scheduled to play 14 games. They could play 12 games. You could give them 4 losses, for the forfeitures on the other 4. They'd still end up winning the Big 12. So either way you slice it, they're the Big 12's best team. And, hey, the plus side, if KU is able to pull off the improbable tomorrow and beat Baylor, it would be the most impressive win that anybody in college basketball has secured so far this year. So there you go. Look at it as an opportunity, not as a challenge. He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk. This episode is brought to you by Select One Security and Communications, your one-stop shop for all home technology needs, including, pretty self-explanatory, security. Home security and family security are top priorities for all of us. Protecting your family and your possessions with in-home security systems is one of the wisest choices you will ever make. Derek, did you know that FBI statistics have shown that every 12 seconds a home is burglarized in the United States? Did you know that?
Is that real?
Because you don't check your FBI statistics webpage nearly as often as you should be. Select One Security, guess what? They check it all the time. And they will work with you to make sure your house is protected with a burglar alarm system from top to bottom 24 hours a day. I know on this show, less than a year ago, I suggested that all homes should go backwards in terms of security systems and install a moat around their house. You know, put a drawbridge, a moat, get some alligators, some piranhas, stuff like that. I still stand by that statement, but again, I don't own a technology company. Select One is exactly that. They've got some more forward-thinking ideas that I think you should probably hear them out on. Select One Security offers wired and advanced wireless in-home security systems. Give them a call today at 785-843-3434, or you can visit them online at selectonesecurity.com. Baylor will be playing their second game since returning from what was about a 3-week layoff when they head to Allen Fieldhouse to face off against Kansas tomorrow, which I guess technically is senior night. I know they're going to have senior night festivities, even though it won't be the last game that Marcus Garrett and Mitch Lightfoot play in Allen Fieldhouse. That will be next Thursday against UTEP, and I guess even to that point, they could both come back for another season. How does this all work? Maybe Matt Galloway can clarify. Matt Galloway, Topeka Capital Journal, joins us now. Matt, what happens if Marcus Garrett, Mitch Lightfoot give a speech, and I don't even know, will they even give speeches to nobody, and then they decide to use their extra year of eligibility and come back for another season next year?
Well, I think we would all have to probably ask for our tears and our sorrow back for them leaving and all the emotions that we're going to dump into Saturday's game. No, it's totally their prerogative. And I mean, and they might have a change of heart at some point. I mean, it's literally a scholarship that it doesn't affect KU. I think KU would welcome them both back. It's not like it's a numbers thing with both of them. I think Marcus Garrett for sure, this being his team and, being the heart and soul of this team really, and the defensive leader and presence that is really trying to instill the new direction that they're trying to take. It's not really a new direction. It's just one that, I think that the players have bought into more since that rough patch in January. But Marcus, I'd be surprised if he's an NBA player, an NBA regular. Obviously he could improve his shot, and I think that's the only deficiency in his game. I think if he could have that kind of an impressive shooting turnaround, I think he'd be an NBA staple on a bench somewhere. But whenever you look at his career, I think it probably plays out more overseas, if not in the G League. And he could begin doing that immediately. I don't think there's anything left for him to prove here. And, if I were advising him, I would say, you are what you are at this point, and you are what you were last year as well. So I would probably advise him to take that next step. And then Ochai, I would say I'm probably leaning to him staying just because there's more for him to gain. I think there's more of a you know, he's more of the prototypical type of athlete that you could see making that leap and jumping onto some NBA draft boards. But he could also, you know, really surprise some people at the combine or at workouts, and he could, you know, jump up and end up leaving. So those would be the three, I would say, and probably some transfers also thrown in there. But who knows? That's always kind of a crapshoot.
That's a good point that you brought up, that, you know, Mitch can go to these workouts with these NBA teams and tell them, you know, I've been playing out of position for basically 4 years. You guys haven't even really seen what I'm capable of doing.
Absolutely. It's the unknown. It's like the that game show on TV in the afternoons where it's like, do you take the 7-footer, or do you take the like dynamic guard, or do you take what's behind the mystery box? And I would say, you know, Mitch Lightfoot's probably the mystery box. No, I mean, again, it's like Marcus. He is what he is. And I think that he would have been helped a little bit. I think he's selfless. I think he's, you know, playing a lot of the five. It's not his natural position, but I mean, I think about some of the games he had 2 years ago, the game at TCU. I mean, he really hasn't had performances like that this year. And that was a year where he was also playing the five. So I think the era of, you know, guys with Mitch Lightfoot's body type and skill set being fours, I think you'll see less and less of that around college. And I think that it's, I don't know, I'm not saying that I think both he and Marcus could have value next year simply because there's absolutely no drawback to having them. But if either of them were to take a scholarship in this hypothetical, then you'd have to have a discussion, which probably says a little bit about what more in Mitch's case, what he, I guess, would be unable to really bring to the table in what would be, what, his sixth year at KU?
Yeah, man, that's tough to keep track. But yes, he's already redshirted once. Now he's a redshirt senior. I don't know how we would even refer to him. A redshirt double senior? If he comes back for next year, we'll have to coin some terminology. We were just talking about this earlier, Matt, that KU's a 5-point underdog. And I don't want to speak on behalf of you, but personally, I kind of feel like, not that I don't think KU could win tomorrow, it would be very surprising if they won. And it would be to the point of saying, like, how impressive of a victory. It would be the most, I think, surprising outcome of a game that we've seen in any KU game or any Big 12 game, for that matter, this year, even more so than K-State beating Oklahoma just because Baylor's looked that unbeatable. Do you agree with me? And how different do you think our outlook would be if this were a normal senior night with 16,000 plus inside the field house?
Well, I think it would definitely help KU's chances. There's no doubt about that. I'm not sure that this would be the most shocking outcome of the Big 12 season. Of course, I'd have to have all the results in front of me. There's probably only like two or three that would be shocking, right? Because there's only two or three bottom feeders that have a collective like three wins in Big 12 play. So yeah, I would say probably K-State beating Oklahoma was an impressive one, but they're playing better lately. They challenged Texas at home pretty well a couple weeks ago, and I think they beat TCU. So I think that definitely qualifies. But I would not be blown away if KU wins this game. To me, this KU team, it really comes down to, because I think that they've bought in, and I think that they're going to defend. I think they're going to play defense better than they did in Waco, and a lot of that, you know, some of those makes that they were making, that Baylor made in that first half, were just absolutely insane. And I don't think that there's any way that you could really guard that approach. You just have to hope that if you're a KU fan, that Baylor is still a little bit rusty, still, you know, comes out of the gate a little bit like they did against Iowa State in that first half. Now, when they got down, what was it? It was like 15 or something crazy to Iowa State in the first half of that game. I turned to the person I was watching with, and I was like, Baylor's going to win by 10. They didn't win by 10, but, I mean, a lot of how Iowa State made inroads in that game was just firing away from three and making them basically for the first time this season. And I don't think that KU can count on that. We know at this point that this is definitively, you know, anyone like myself who thought at the beginning of the year that this would be a good shooting team, you know, my bad. I'll take the L on that one. I was wrong. This is not a good shooting team. This is a team that's capable of having games like it had against West Virginia at home. And I think that, you know, aggressiveness is part of it. How many looks did Christian Brown pass up against Texas? I mean, I think that you know, it's a little bit worrisome that at the end of the year that that's still a problem. And even on the last play of regulation, Ochai, and you know, I don't think that – I think it beats the alternative of losing, but I don't think that that was a game that KU necessarily wanted to go into overtime with against Texas. I think that was a win-or-go-home type of possession, and that is reflected in the play that they drew up and ended up, you know, subsequently not running. So I think that this game against Baylor, I don't think it's – you know, even if KU gets crushed in this game, I don't think it's going to really adjust the – expectations that I have for this team going into the postseason, and I guess going into the UTEP game, which I keep having to remember is going to be the last game before the postseason ends or the postseason starts. But you know, I think a victory would definitely change the national narrative about this team. I think if KU hits some shots and wins the game, I think we're at the point now, and I don't know how you feel about this. This team is what I think it is, and you know, a hot shooting game. They're going to have to stretch together several of them in a row for me to change my outlook on how this team is from a shooting and just straight up from an offense standpoint. And, you know, maybe David McCormick is going to have to hit his next dunk for me to think that that's not going to be a problem going forward. And maybe he's going to have to jump a little bit higher than like a couple inches off the ground, but I kid, I'm being unnecessarily mean, but after that.
But there's always some truth in the sarcasm, right? So did you at all feel like David McCormick's missed dunk against Texas was, in a way, a microcosm of this team's offense this year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's a little bit unfair to him because he's been playing so well since the turn of the calendar. And to me, the bigger problem is not their production inside, because he's actually been quite productive in that time period. It's been their lack of aggressiveness and their inaccuracy at times from outside from their wings. But in a nutshell, I mean, this is a team that has struggled with athletic plays. They've struggled with, you know, getting those sensational lobs and just out, you know, athleting people as we've seen in the past. I spoke to Sharon Collins yesterday, who's going to be at the game. And he said that this is not a KU team that has a bunch of high flyers. He said, you know, they've got some guys that can fly, but it's just a team that you don't see as many dunks as you get normally, and those are things that infuse energy. It just, KU has to be the scrappiest and toughest team out there, which I think against Texas, I fully felt that way from start to finish of that game. You know, the production was a little bit different whenever you didn't have Bryce Thompson in the second half going for, you know, streaking breakaway dunks as Texas was just tripping over itself. But I think that from start to finish, that was a scrappy effort. That was a tough effort. And I wouldn't have felt any different if KU got one more or one fewer point in regulation. This team is basically where I thought it was last weekend, and I don't see much happening in the Baylor game that would change my trajectory for what they're capable of. I do think that their ceiling, you know, I've heard multiple people now say that this team, best case scenario, the ceiling would be a Sweet 16. The NCAA tournament is such a crapshoot. It is the most exciting way to crown a champion in all of sports, but it is also probably the least legitimate way to crown who a deserving champion is in basically any sport that I can think of. And do people not remember the bad Syracuse teams that went on runs and got to Final Fours? This KU team could absolutely get hot from three-point range or put some things together defensively to clamp down on people, or have a better team have a worse performance or a bad game, or get stricken with some COVID, you know, or something like that that sidelines, you know, their best players. I mean, this is such a crapshoot that I refuse to put any kind of a ceiling on virtually any team that's entering this as, I don't know, a top 30 team. I think this is going to be a crazy year, even though I really do feel that top two teams in the country are Gonzaga and Baylor, and I think it's a pretty steep drop off to Michigan, in my opinion.
So the ceiling is the roof for Kansas.
Yeah, the ceiling is winning the national title game 200-5. I'll put that as the ceiling.
But you know what, man? Have we seen them string together six games at any point this season that would make you think that they could do it next month?
No, not necessarily, but I mean, just look at Iowa. Iowa yesterday, Iowa, you know, the darling of a lot of people a couple days ago against Michigan, just got completely boat raced. And if you look at Iowa's resume, I mean, they've had a little bit better of a season than Kansas, but every single one of Kansas's losses is a good loss. It's a quality loss. There's nothing in there that's a head-scratcher. They didn't drop a game to K-State at home. They didn't do anything that you've seen at the other power, you know, traditional power programs. And I think that, what's lacking is just that signature win. Now, they can get it on Saturday. I don't think it's going to necessarily really change their seeding line unless they win out from here. And, you know, a couple of victories over Baylor would definitely help if you can get them again at the Big 12 tournament. But I think this is a KU team that, in my opinion, I don't know where the seed is going to end up necessarily, but I think it's on a collision course with whatever number one seed it ends up in its regional. And from there, I mean, I guess, or it could slip up. It could slip up in the first round. I mean, that's the whole point of the NCAA tournament. This is not like college football. This is not like the NBA where you have a seven-game series. This is a complete and total crapshoot. I don't need to tell people that, how many good KU teams that, you know, were far better than this team fell in the first or second round of the NCAA tournament, whereas this team could get further along and you could say still it didn't have the kind of season that those predecessors had. So I kind of forgot what your question was, but
we were talking about the ceiling. Is this team capable of winning four games or five games?
I think that this team is capable of beating anyone and capable of losing to just about anyone. And I know that that's kind of a cop-out, but I would not go into a game saying that there's, you know, it's certain that KU would lose unless it's probably one of those top three teams.
I don't think that's a cop-out at all because, as we saw with Baylor against Iowa State, a game you referenced earlier, like, Baylor's capable of beating anyone, but they're not capable of losing to anyone.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Iowa State, and granted, Iowa State is far inferior to KU. Iowa State gave Baylor its absolute best shot in that first half, and Baylor was still within reach and just, you know, pulled ahead in the second half with relative ease. And I don't think Baylor ever really looked panicked at any point in that game. That's the thing is, I mean, Baylor is a juggernaut, and I think KU is going to have to play. I don't expect KU to win on Saturday. KU is going to have to play a perfect game, and even then, it's going to need Baylor to be uncharacteristically, you know, above average, I guess, which is about as good of praise as I could give a team.
Well, when you talk about Kansas playing their absolute best, it starts with the defense. That's why they went on a five-game winning streak. It's because their defense, even against Texas, I thought continued to look like one of the premier defenses in the country. And that, to me, is the big question, is do you think this Kansas defense is capable of looking elite against Baylor, who has either the best, second best, third best offense in the country?
Yeah, I think KU's defense over the last, I'd say since the West Virginia game, but really if you take out the West Virginia game, I would say since the Tennessee game, and even then I don't think that they played the Volunteers horribly from a defensive scheme or execution standpoint. I think it was more so just Tennessee going uncharacteristically, you know, haywire from three-point range that ended up making that game really not competitive. I look at this game against Baylor and I would say this is going to be a true test of, you know, whereas Texas, we saw the best and the worst of Texas as a three-point shooting team in both of the games that it played against Kansas. I think Baylor is among the more consistent shooting teams, and I think that if KU can show that, you know, those moments that we saw where K-State players were left absolutely wide open, show that that was more of a strategy and less of a defensive lapse, I think that that would be an encouraging sign, because whenever you go into this game, if Baylor's players are left that wide open, this won't be a competitive game. KU's going to have to guard for 40 minutes, start to finish, can't have any kind of mistakes on that end of the court. And even then, it's going to have to play a better offensive game than it's played probably since December if it wants to get out of here with a win. And you know, it's six points is not a crazy line. It's just unprecedented, as Jesse Newell pointed out on Twitter, that you know, there's no record of KU dating back to at least 1989 being a home underdog. So it's definitely going to be a weird feel on Saturday, but I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility for KU to win this game and hand Baylor a loss. And I don't think KU should feel after the Texas game any different than it did before about what it's capable of. We're 1 point away at any point in regulation from talking about KU entering on a six-game winning streak and playing better than close to anyone in the country.
I like doing this on Fridays. I don't know how much I've done it with you, but since it is Baylor and it's the biggest game you've played all year, I'm sure you love this as a newspaper guy. Let's write Monday's headlines today, or I guess Sunday's headlines on Friday. If Kansas were to somehow beat Baylor tomorrow, like, what's going to be the headline about this team afterwards?
Well, I would remind you that most newspaper writers don't actually write the headlines, so I would like it if you would show me a little bit more respect.
You've never written a headline? Not one time?
No. I mean, I mostly write all of my own headlines, so I was just
okay. So now the truth comes out. Okay.
Yeah, I would say DeJuan Harris erupts for 30 points and stunts. No, the narrative is let me reverse this on you a little bit. Let me pull a little bit of an Uno here. Do you think there's anything KU could do to get a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament?
Realistically, or just like, is it literally possible?
Well, let's just say best case scenario in your mind. Let's say they beat Baylor twice and win.
Yeah,
the
you'd have to
tournament.
Beat Baylor, then go to the Big 12 tournament, then beat like West Virginia, then Texas, then Baylor.
Even then, it would take a couple other teams dropping off. So I, as crazy as this sounds, I don't think that this game on Saturday matters that much, other than the fact that it is a chance at getting back at one of the worst losses for KU this year, getting back at a team that's going to win the Big 12 and, you know, with far fewer games than KU played, far easier schedule than KU played. Baylor was supposed to play Gonzaga earlier this year. That would have been amazing. Didn't happen. So I think even if KU wins, even if KU shoots lights out, I don't think there's anything as a trend from that performance that would lead you to believe that, okay, the switch is flipped. I mean, I don't see any scenario where Monday I'm saying the switch is flipped. So I guess the real headline would be something like Kansas defeats Baylor 65-62, which is about as boring as it could possibly be. But I don't see anything unless it's just a complete stunning triumph for KU that would cause me to adjust my scales at this point. This team, you know, for the betterment of itself, has really completely played a full schedule, and I think that will pay dividends in March. But I think it's given us more of a sample size to say I don't see a lot changing between now and Monday.
He's Matt Galloway, Topeka Capital Journal, and don't you forget, he writes his own headlines. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Tommy's Express Car Wash. Join the Tommy Club. You can download the Tommy Club app and enjoy endless washing for one low price, Derek. That means unlimited car washes, unlimited clean, shiny, and dry, unlimited use of exclusive app lane, which, by the way, I've taken advantage of. It's kind of like the express lane on the highway. You don't necessarily like to lord over everybody else, but when you're zooming through and getting in to get your car washed first, like, that's why it's called Tommy's Express, right? You get unlimited access to all their locations, unlimited guest service, and perhaps most importantly, unlimited happiness, Derek. And I think that's something that we just don't emphasize nearly enough in life. I'm looking at your car right now. I'm thinking it could maybe use a trip to Tommy's Express. What do you got going on later? Thinking maybe you should stop there on your way home. You going to at least consider it?
I will absolutely be going to Tommy's Express Car Wash.
Now, the outside of your car, the exterior, it does look okay. Where my concern begins is the interior of your car.
Yeah. When you have
I don't think the inside of that car has seen a deep cleaning in quite some time.
No, when you have a dog, when you have a golden retriever, you got hair everywhere. And they have those vacuums that, you know, it's going to get out for you. So, yeah, I'm definitely making an appointment. Tommy's Express Car Wash.
What I love about the vacuums at Tommy's Express, the cord comes down from the top. So you're not having to try and wrap it around your car and getting yourself into a pretzel. No, very flexible vacuums. You want to go to the left side of the car, the right side of your car. You're perfectly good. Tommy's Express Car Wash. Wash, rinse, repeat. Okay, I am about to change your life. That is, if you are any sort of gambler. Derek, you fancy yourself a bit of a degenerate, do you not?
On occasion.
I mean that in the most positive way possible. Anybody who is gambling on sports just for the thrill of it, I like to think of you as a bit of a degenerate. And maybe we need to fight that stigma, but that's kind of down the road in terms of stigmas that we as a society are trying to fight. In fact, I don't really think anybody is trying to fight that. I'm on a bona fide heater when it comes to betting, specifically betting on college basketball. What if I told you I haven't lost a bet in 10 days and that I'm betting every single day? What would you
like
say?
A lot? Like, are you betting on a lot of games?
At least one game per day.
That's pretty cool.
You'd think, okay, well, I'm hot and I'm bound to go on a cold spell, right?
Yes.
I want to talk to you all today about the metrics. The metrics. February 13th, so this is about 2 weeks ago, a friend, we have a group chat, gambler group chat, somebody tipped me off to this Twitter account that was posting suggestions for bets in college basketball. And I didn't really read into it that much, but the guy was explaining, hey, this guy has a model, a predictive model that he uses to bet on college basketball, and he does really well. And I said, okay, sure he does, right? Because I know what predictive models are. I know what KenPom is. I know what Bart Torvik is. And those guys, I think they go around the 60% mark, 65%, which is, you know, you're about breaking even if you hit on 60% of games. So I go and I check out this guy's Twitter page, and he has like 1,000 followers. And I go, okay, like, this is stupid. This guy's got 1,200 followers, and he's got some sort of model that is helping him predict college basketball games. So I go to his Twitter page, and he has this tweet from February 13th that said that when his model has a 68.6% chance or higher of this outcome happening, he is 27-1 against the money line. He is 26-2 against the spread. I said, there's no way. There is no way. I would rather you be hitting at 70% than hit at 90%. Because when you're hitting at 90%, I just think you're full of bleep, right? Because no model in sport, it's been proven, you cannot just predict the outcome of sporting events unless you are either from the future or you're paying the players, right? There's the two options. You're paying off guys to throw the game, or you have a time machine and you're going to the future. So I said, okay, whatever, though. I'd like to bet, so I'll just throw a few bucks down on whatever game he puts up for tomorrow. So on February 13th, he tweets out, 71% chance that Louisiana Tech beats UAB by 15+. I always bet against the spread if they're underdogs, money line if they are favored. Spread in this game was Louisiana Tech -1.5. They end up winning by 5. Cool. Win. That's a good way to start, because if I'm going to follow somebody's betting picks and I lose the first one, I probably will never check again. February 15th, tweets out, there's a 69% chance that Florida State beats Virginia by 15+. The spread in that game was 2.5. I hit the Florida State money line. As you probably remember, it was a big marquee game. Florida State won 81-60. So then February 16th, I'm 2-0 with this guy. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. February 16th, he picks Fairleigh Dickinson against St. Francis. They lose. They miss. So I'm kind of like, okay, this is kind of what I expected. Okay, you found a guy who's on a heater, and you sort of latch onto it. Then he misses, and then the wheels start to fall off. But this is where things kind of start getting crazy. Because February 17th, he tweets out, there is a 73% chance that Gardner Webb, 8-14 on the season, beats Radford by 15+. Radford's favored in this game by 4.5. So I hit Gardner Webb +4.5, and I hit the money line. They win outright 69-57. Same day, he says there's a 70% chance that Louisville beats Syracuse by 15+. Louisville is favored by 9. Louisville wins by 24 points. So he's now 29-2 since he launched this Twitter page and this model, the metrics, against the money line, and 28-3 against the spread. So at this point, I'm all in, right? At this point, me and my friends, you know, I'm telling all my friends, yo, let's do this every single night. We're going to find this guy's picks, and we're going to bet him. He only posts ones that are 68.6% or above in terms of the probability that he thinks they're going to hit. February 18th, 70% chance Loyola Marymount beats San Francisco by 15. San Francisco's favored by 6. Loyola wins by 5. He doubles down on Gardner Webb. He says, go back to the Gardner Webb Radford well. They win 77-49 as 3.5-point dogs. The next day, 70% chance that Omaha, you remember Omaha, KU beat Omaha by 40 points early in the season. Omaha hasn't won since that game, or hadn't won since that game. They're on a 14-game losing streak. They're 2-18 on the season. He says there's a 70% chance they beat North Dakota by 15. They win that game by 10 as 2-point favorites. They cover the line. Last Saturday, he says 74% chance Furman beats Mercer by 15-plus. Furman was a 3-point dog. They win by 10. On Monday, Charleston Southern wins by 1 as a 3-point dog. On Tuesday, Ole Miss wins by 7 as a 4-point dog. Georgia beats LSU by 13 as a 4.5-point dog. On Wednesday, he picks Chattanooga against Mercer as a 4-point dog. Mercer wins by 4 in overtime. It was a push. It was the first game in a week that I had won based off this guy's picks, and it was because it was just a push. I didn't lose. It was just a push in overtime. And by the way, in that game, it took an act of God for Chattanooga not to cover, because a guy comes off the bench for Mercer. His name's Kamar Robertson. I'm watching all these games on ESPN Plus, by the way. I'm addicted now to watching low major college basketball.
Getting the money out of your subscription.
Kamar Robertson, who averages 2.3 points per game off the bench, goes 12 for 12. He scores 28 points just for Mercer.
Harold and Kermar save the college basketball bet.
Get the push. So, this guy now, and you can go, you can look him up on Twitter, at UseTheMetrics. In a span of 2 weeks, he's went from 1,200 followers to 12,000 followers. He is 36-3 against the money line and 35-3 against the spread. It sounds too good to be true. I know. I get it. I've been there. I am here to tell you, with firsthand experience, I can't miss because he can't miss. This guy cannot miss. And the beauty of it, he's giving away these picks for free. He puts his Venmo and his Cash App in the bio, and he says, if you guys want to send me a tip, that's great. All I really want, though, I'm not asking for cash. Just tell your friends about me. And it's word of mouth. This is the old-fashioned way of giving away picks. He's not asking for money. Now, maybe a month from now, 2 months from now, he'll switch to a subscription service. But I'm telling you right now, there is this guy running his model, which, by the way, I've tried to crack it. I'm going through the KenPom pages and figuring out what all the similarities. Is it because they shoot a lot of threes? Is it because they force a lot of turnovers? Is it because they get a lot of offensive rebounds? I can't figure it out, man. I'm like sitting there in a classroom, like in trigonometry, and my teacher's up at the front just like writing these equations on the board, and my head's spinning. Like I'm like the cartoon character who had the anvil dropped in my head, and I got the bird spinner. I don't know what this guy is doing to produce these picks. But you don't just luck your way into 36-3 against the money line. You don't luck your way in to 35-3 against the spread. So I'm doing my part now, because this guy doesn't want money. You can Venmo him, and I did. I got on such a heater. I sent the guy $25. I said, here you go. Thanks, man. I have friends who are doing the same, just like showing the love. This is the way the world's supposed to work, by the way. If somebody's going to give away such a valuable product for free, the least you could do as a decent human being is throw the guy a bone. And that's why I think, because everybody's showing this guy so much love, that's why I think he keeps giving them away for free, because it's like, who else has a business model quite like this? And I know for a fact, you told me before the show today, your wife's taking a trip this week. She's going up to Iowa, and you said, I'm going to have her place some bets for me. Mm-hmm. You need to go on a Twitter.
I will reference this, yes.
At UseTheMetrics. And by the way,
it's going to be the first time he loses.
You need to get push notifications. You need to get pushed. No, I'm serious, because he's moving lines now. He's moving lines. You want the three picks for tonight? I'm going to share them with everybody. I'm going to share them with everybody, but you need to go and follow this guy on Twitter, at UseTheMetrics. Three official plays for tonight. Hit them all. Hit the hit
How
the
has
spread.
Vegas not seen this and just been like, we're just going to, whatever he thinks, like, we're doing that? Like, at some point, that's going to happen. This guy's
because
just going to get hired by
Vegas. Because
Vegas
is undefeated and 2 good months is not enough for them to start sweating.
They're going to just hire this guy.
Maybe he already works for them.
Ooh, he's an inside guy.
And they're trying to weed him out right now. Mm. They're like, it's some
disgruntled
employee. I don't know. Official plays for tonight from the metrics. And I'm not going to do this every day because I want this guy to go. I want you guys to go follow him. I'm not going to relay the picks every single day. But I'll reference them on air after I win the day after. But if you want these picks, you need to go follow this guy. You need to get the push notifications. The official plays for tonight. And this was tweeted out last night. I haven't even checked the lines today. I got them locked in last night at like 12 a.m. Missouri State, -6. Northern Iowa, -2.5. And Denver, -1. I know that the Northern Iowa line's moved at least 1 point. Missouri State, -6. Northern Iowa, -2.5. Denver, -1. This has been the most exhilarating 2 or 3 weeks of my life. It really has.
You, because every day during the show the last 2 weeks, you've been like, I'm on Charleston Southern. I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I didn't tell you. I didn't tell you. That was my fault. I should have shared the information with you. But, you know, you're so dismissive of me when I told you I was on Charleston Southern. And I sit there and I'm watching this guy. Flandris Fleming Jr. hits a pull-up three in overtime to get the win. That's been one of the funnest parts about watching some of these games is just seeing these low major kids ball out. Because every one of these teams has some 6'1 point guard who can drop 30 and just is going to rain threes. It's been fun to watch. Like, none of these teams are going to the tournament. Like, most of these teams are like 5-18. Like, some of the worst, like, even in the low major conferences, they're not the best teams in that conference. But if you're winning bets, you'll watch anything. You'll watch cribbage, man. Like, you'll watch cricket, whatever, if you're hitting on these bets. This is the holy grail of gambling. This is what everybody, since the beginning of sports gambling, has tried to do, is come up with a formula to predict the outcome of events. And until now, it's been impossible. You cannot do it. I don't get it. I'm flabbergasted as to how somebody could go on a run like this. And maybe you're right. Maybe now that he's starting to blow up, like, the luck's going to run out. Or maybe this guy is the most brilliant man to ever walk the face of the earth. Those are the only
two options.
No,
we're living back to the future. Seriously, we're living back to the future. Yeah.
Those are the only two options.
His only losses are intentional so that it throws people a little bit off the trail.
But that's the thing is, like, Chattanooga pushing the other night when some guy comes off the bench for 28. Like, if I were from the future and I had to come back and be like, well, I don't want them to, like, kill me, right? It's like Superman. You think, oh, who wouldn't like Superman? It's like, you're too powerful. We don't trust you. That's what he has to do. He said, I'll give you a push. Right. I'm going to give you a push just to make you guys think that I'm mortal. And I'm only going to give you that push because some dude averaging 2 points is going to come off the bench and go 12 for 12, Derek. 12 for 12. Are you kidding me? Or he is Albert Einstein.
No, but even then, because what is happening, like, the action on the court is not being done by computer. It'd be done by people, right? So it doesn't make sense.
I love this guy.
Maybe we go back to the idea he's just paying players.
Hey, if I'm not here on Monday, it's because I pulled a Jonah Hill Wolf of Wall Street. I quit my job. I work for you.
Okay.
Because I parlayed all three of those teams, Missouri State, Northern Iowa, and Denver. Parlayed them. I teased them. I hit the money lines. I hit the spread. I mean, I got a lot invested in these guys' picks. If that hits, there's a good chance I'm quitting my job and going to work for this guy. Whatever he wants. I'll be his pool boy. You know what I mean? I'll be his court jester.
Yeah, just be around
greatness. Like, I'll just sit there. I'll wrestle a bear while he eats lunch just for his entertainment. If I can just breathe the same air as this soothsayer. At Use the Metrics. All other basketball analytics have now been rendered useless. Trying to change your life here. Trying to enhance your life with the metrics. I'm Nick Schwert. He's Derek Johnson. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. What do you think a Kansas win looks like tomorrow? Let's start with the necessities, because I think if you're building the perfect game, the perfect scenario for KU to win, there's the necessary ingredients, and then there's the sure would be nice to have that. Like if you're eating strawberry shortcake, it's like, well, you need...
Interesting cake choice.
Well, you need... Well, okay, because think about it. With strawberry shortcake, it's like, I need... I don't know how to make a strawberry shortcake, so I'm not even the best.
Whipped cream, strawberries, but that's the thing, angel food cake.
The angel food cake.
Okay.
Like, you need to have the angel food cake.
Yes.
You don't have to have the whipped cream. It'd be nice.
I think you do.
Maybe I was just confusing angel food cake with strawberry shortcake. I guess, yeah.
In the angel food cake, you do need angel food cake to have angel food cake.
Okay, then let's start this scenario over. I need dessert. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you could say, oh, I got angel food cake. I'd say, well, that'd be
good. No, all right. Here's a better metaphor for you. You want an ice cream sundae. You don't need whipped cream for your ice cream sundae. You have to have ice cream.
I feel like the ice cream sundae analogies are overused.
Because they're good. Sometimes cliches are for a reason.
I want to be original. Unoriginal.
Fine. Come up with your stupid dessert idea.
Okay, I got dessert. I want dessert. You say, here, angel food cake. I said, that's fine. You got any whipped cream? You got any strawberries? What is the angel food cake of KU's game versus Baylor tomorrow?
Not turning the ball over is the first one, offensively. That's where it has to start. Jesse has kind of talked about that. You've talked about that, the idea that they can't turn the ball over because they're inconsistent shooting. You have to start there. And then defensively, it's just hope like hell that they don't go off.
No, think you can't. You have to do more than hope. You have to make your own luck. I think you cannot allow them to get loose from three. You can't. You've been an elite defense the last 2 weeks. You cannot give them wide open shots. If they get hot and they're knocking down contested jumpers, that's fine. But if you're letting them get wide open threes, it's a non-negotiable. So I agree with you. Don't turn the ball over. And you've got to play good defense against Baylor shooters. Okay, those are the necessities. Where's the whipped cream and the strawberries now?
Hit a lot of threes.
That's a big one.
Try not to get destroyed by their offensive rebounding.
I think you need a big game from Dave.
Yeah.
I think you could use a 20-10 game from Dave. Of course, you could use it, but that's why it's the whipped cream. It may even be the scoop of ice cream next to the strawberry shortcake. Like, you guys want ice cream with your... Of course I want ice cream. Why are you even asking? Just put it on the plate. That's the ice cream, is that you need Dave to not be the 3-for-9, 8 points, and 4 turnovers, Dave. You get a solid Dave performance along with big-time shooting, along with good defense, not turning the ball over. There you go. There's the perfect dessert, the perfect recipe for KU beating Baylor. I'm Nick Schwert. He's Derek Johnson. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk.